Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
Greetings, Curiosity Builders. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, makers, artists, podcasters, writers, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of bringing their ideas to life by creating new things and getting their work to work. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast, challenge your assumptions about what is possible, and chase big ideas so you can become who you were born to be. What does it take to rehab and rebuild your career? Whether you're stuck or think it's impossible to do new things, Kanika Tolver has insight and knowledge on how to both rebuild your personal brand and change the way you think about your career. Kanika is a career coach, consultant, author, and technologist who wants to help people create epic lives. In this interview episode of Getting Work to Work, Kanika talks about her new book, Career Rehab, Rebuild Your Personal Brand and Rethink the Way You Work, as well as the importance of education, experience, and exposure. She also shares her view of networking as the formation of alliances, the role of power and respect in getting paid, why learning is critical in determining our value, and how she uses alter egos to define her own personal brand. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/374. You'll also find links to stream the show on the major podcast platforms, an opportunity to keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios through the Curiosity Lab, and ways to support Getting Work to Work by purchasing posters, swag packs, and more. Kanika, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Awesome. I'm so happy to be here with you.
That's great. What's one interesting bit of trivia people should know about you?
I'm a sneaker collector. I like to collect sneakers. I like to collect all the retro sneakers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have like over 100 pair of sneakers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yes. Was there a particular sneaker that did it for you that just kicked off the obsession?
I think the Jordans, you know, all the Michael Jordan sneakers. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually like all brands, so I'm a big fan of them. Chateau Adidas, I'm a big fan of Puma. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of like all brands. So like I'm not, cool. I don't stick to just like one brand. So yeah.
Did you see that episode of the show Abstract on Netflix where they interviewed and profiled the designer of the Jordans?
Oh, no, I didn't.
I think his name's Hatfield Tinker, or Tinker Hatfield. There we go.
Oh, okay, cool.
With Nike. Yeah, it's a really cool profile. And they talk about designing the Back to the Future 2 shoe and all that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool show regardless of that episode. So it's worth your time.
Awesome.
So you are the CEO and founder of Career Rehab and have also written a book called Career Rehab, Rebuild Your Personal Brand and Rethink the Way You Work. Captivating title. I just have to ask, what inspired you to want to help people rebuild their careers?
I wanted to use the word rebuild specifically because so many people have a career or have a foundation that they started. So some people have went into a certain field, they want to change careers. Some people want a promotion. Some people, you know, want to go into leadership. So rebuilding just takes us to new levels, you know, because sometimes we don't know exactly where we want to be after being in the industry for 10, 15 years. Your desires, they start to change. So you have to skill up and get ready for the next level. So rebuilding is really about building upon that existing foundation that you already have.
That's awesome. Because when I think rebuild, sometimes we come at career from the perspective of making a change completely, whereas I like this idea of building upon what's already there.
Yes. So in the book, I talk about how you have a home, right? And you have an existing home that needs some renovations. You need a new kitchen. You need a new bathroom. You may need to renovate the basement. The foundation of that home is already there, but to put it back on the market so someone will buy it, It's the same way we have to do with ourselves sometimes. We have to do some career renovations to kind of be able to get back out there into brand marketing and sell ourselves into the jobs that we desire.
What's interesting about that too is there are several things that you just said that's interesting. One is the foundation is set. So what are some things of the foundation that maybe people forget about or need to be reminded of?
People forget about the foundation of, like I like to call them, three things that edify you. You have your education, you have your experience. And a lot of times people forget about their education and their experience. And then I also talk about exposure. So let's just kind of like talk about education. So education is like, we have college degrees, we have certifications, we have training that we have taken. Sometimes we forget to really build upon those things because maybe we've gotten a degree a long time ago, or maybe, you know, recently we took a training. We don't build upon those things that are educational or formal training to go to the next level. And then we don't build upon experience. Experience is just work experience that we take for granted. The little things that we did, the job that we had that maybe launched our career. We don't really allow that to shine sometimes when we're trying to go from role to role to different roles. Yeah. And exposure is just being able to do a presentation, being able to shine your light in a briefing or on a conference call, or being able to do tech talks, because I'm in tech, so I say tech talks. Yeah. Just being able to do talks around the things that you're passionate about or the things that you're knowledgeable about, that's exposure, right? Because it gives you like this audience of people that look at you as a subject matter expert. So I like to think of that those are things that we take for granted sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were describing education and experience, the word wisdom comes to mind, because two of the three E's that you just explained are the foundations of wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how do you model what you teach and coach in your own career? I mean, are you constantly rebuilding your own career?
Actually, I am. So I'm in the information technology industry. So I'm a project manager. I manage a lot of software development teams.
Wow.
So that's been my experience since 2008. I've managed a lot of different projects within the federal government in Washington, D.C. I've come to the conclusion that I want to take my career to the next level with learning cloud computing technologies, with learning more cybersecurity technologies and machine learning. There's so many things that are happening in tech that I feel like I need to keep up with, and I need to keep continue to rebrand myself. So I just passed my AWS Solution Architect certification this past week. So for me, I try to model the same things that have helped me get to new levels. I try to encourage my clients to do that as well within their careers.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's a huge feat.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, you know, what is your education in? What was your background that got you interested in tech?
So my education, my bachelor's degree is in computer science.
Oh, wow.
I've been in the industry since about 2005. I graduated in 2005. I've worked as a federal government employee, and I've left the federal government to work in private sector. So I've kind of been on both sides.
Yeah. Was there a moment that just captivated your interest with tech?
The moment was back when AOL Instant Messenger was out, and I had got my first computer at home, and I was using dial-up technology. I was just fascinated by the computer because I was like, wow, you can go online, you can talk to different people online, you can do chats. When eBay first came out, it wasn't using PayPal at the time. You know, I would like go online and buy stuff and have to like, you know, mail out my money order. So e-commerce technologies like eBay was like one of my first, you know, before Amazon became huge, eBay was one of my first e-commerce sites that I would buy everything on.
Did you buy a lot of your sneakers there?
Sneakers, Puma sweatshirts. Yeah, actually, I mean, that's where I still go to buy some of my sneakers for really good deals. So like anybody wants to get sneakers for really good prices, eBay.com is the way to go.
That's awesome. So we are headed into a new year and a brand new decade. And I'm curious, from the research and from the conversations that you've had, what do employers want in employees today?
I think companies have shifted their mindset because I'm a millennial, and I think millennials, we're kind of in our mid-30s, and we're kind of at the point of our career where companies are looking for a lot of either college graduates or they're looking for millennials. So I think employers are really looking for people that are passionate about certain topics and technologies and methodologies that fit into the industry that they're hiring a role for. Companies are also looking for culture fit now. Like culture fit is very important right now, because at one time your resume was really what got you in the door. But companies are really looking for people that mash up well with the people that are already in the organization. Every company, you know, like Facebook and Twitter and Google, they have these cultures that they've already kind of created. They're looking for people that have a certain personality fit as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I'm curious about culture fit and what it takes to fit into a culture when, in some instances, we want to be confident and comfortable with who we are. And yet sometimes that means, do we put ourselves on the side so that we can fit in better?
I think that career ownership and taking back, you know, your personal brand, since we're talking about that a little bit, we as in professionals have to align our personality with the right culture. So I like to research the company and to see if what I see on Glassdoor.com, the reviews, what I hear from other existing employees that I may reach out to on LinkedIn. I think it's important that we don't conform to the culture, that we find companies that are a good culture fit for us. So it's a two-way street. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go join this company and I have to change who I am to fit in. I think there are some points of compromise that happen as well, because, you know, every company's not going to have everything that you desire from a culture fit perspective. But there should be things that you have on your to-do list to say that these are the things that I want from an organization, and do they align with who I am and who I desire to be at work?
I love how you describe that too, because it really says that your work, your career is your responsibility, and it's your responsibility to figure out where you fit best.
I think the old school mindset of like baby boomers and Gen Xers is that, hey, they just wanted a job and they were just so happy that they got a job offer. But millennials are saying, hey, you know, in addition to you liking my resume and my education, I have to take a step back at, am I going to feel comfortable coming to work every day in this environment?
So you mentioned earlier a brand, and that we need to focus on our personal brand and not just be an employee. How are those two mindsets, brand and employees, that different?
So an employee mindset is one that I think people have a job. I think even the word job and careers, there's some differences in that too. But I think the employee mindset is that, hey, I'm going to come here every day. I'm going to do exactly what I'm told, but I'm not going to go beyond that. I'm not going to develop new ways to stand apart from everyone else. Whereas a brand is saying, I have unique offerings. I have unique skill sets. I am doing my job and I'm doing it well, but I'm also doing these improvements. I'm also bringing new processes. I'm also am adding value by bringing past work experience that stands out, or past certifications or education that stands out. An employee doesn't always go outside those boundaries. They kind of stay within their job description and they do just enough to get by.
Yeah. Which sounds so dangerous when you put it that way.
Yeah, because you're allowing people that are confident in their ability to perform at work at a high level to outshine you, who may have been doing this job for 20 years or 10 years, where that you haven't grown any of your skills in those last 10 years to set yourself apart.
So what are some of the challenges in transforming an employee mindset into a brand mindset?
The challenges is that we, as all professionals, I think we undervalue what we do every day. We look at the small things and we look at them to not be big. So I think transforming your mindset to say that you may do that report, you may do that spreadsheet, you may do that presentation deck, and you may do it over and over and over every week, or you may do it on a monthly basis. We need to look at ourselves as brands by making the small things look big. I'll give you an example.
Please.
You know when you go to Chick-fil-A?
And wait in line?
Yeah, and you wait in line, right? Like if you go to Chick-fil-A and then you go to Wendy's,
yeah,
they make the process of ordering your food so much more easier. It's a simple task, right? That each fast food restaurant offers a drive-thru, or each fast food restaurant offers fast food. But the customer service and the way that they deliver the food, the way they get you in and out, the way that they sometimes in the summertime, they stand outside with tablets and they take your order in the line. That's a brand, right? Because McDonald's does the same thing. They have a drive-thru line too. So we as employees have to take those small little things that we undervalue and we have to start making them look big on our resume, on our LinkedIn profile, and as we articulate ourselves in interviews.
I love the idea of innovation happens in the small things as much as the big things.
Yeah, and I think as professionals, we tend to dumb down the things that we do, and we don't keep a track record of our weekly accomplishments or our performance metrics, like for on a monthly basis. Those are things that you can continue to highlight and be a brand and not an employee.
Yeah. So as I was getting ready for this interview, I was reading a book on leadership and turbulent times. And there was something that just stood out in the context of what we're talking about. And it said, power without vision and purpose isn't leadership. And I'm curious, what role does vision and purpose play in the building of our personal brands?
It plays a huge part. Because when we look at big personal brands, like the leaders that we admire, leaders like in my book, I talk about Warren Buffett, I talk about Jay-Z, I talk about Oprah Winfrey, you know, Mark Zuckerberg. These people have had visions for the way that they desire to be looked at in, as leaders in their own industry, because all these people we name are in different fields. But their vision and their purpose was clearly aligned at the very beginning of their careers. I mean, these people have been out for decades, but they've able to build a personal brand that has allowed people to acknowledge them. And when you hear their names, you clearly know who they are and what they're a leader of in their own right.
Absolutely. So how would you describe your personal brand?
My personal brand, these are my alter egos of my personal brand.
So. I love it.
So my alter egos, I have three alter egos. So I'm a cool geek. That's like, you know, that's the person that's into the whole technology industry, into learning new technology, into the sneakers, into fashion, into the things that most women are into, shopping and stuff like that. So on a regular day, I'm just a cool geek. I read a lot of leadership books like you. I'm a big leadership self-help geek. But then I have corporate rebel. That's when I get to work. And I'm like, I go against the grain. I want to innovate. I want to make things better. So a corporate rebel is like, I don't go with the flow. I create my own flow. A lot of times people may not, I'm very authentic and very myself, you know, at work, because as a cool geek, I already know that I have the foundation of my education. So you really can't, I like the challenge of making things better. So that's why I would say I'm a corporate rebel, because rebel sounds bad in a sense, but it's a positive and a negative type tone, with the corporate rebel. And then my last alter ego of my personal brand is career dropout. So because I want to be an entrepreneur, because I am an author and I am a speaker and a career coach, I want to drop the career for the dream.
Love it.
So that's how I would describe Kanika Tolver.
Sign me up. It's great. I sense that there's some alignment too in your alter egos and the three E's that you talked about: education, experience, and exposure, because each one kind of lines up with each of those sections. Was that intentional?
That was intentional. So when I was writing the book, I was like, edification is something that makes you sound good and makes you sound better, right? And I think for me, those are the three things that have been a launching pad, not just for my career, but my personal brand as an author. So the three E's are just things that are credible. Like, I mean, when you think about personal brands that we admire or some of your favorite authors, a lot of them went to college or, you know, have some formal education of some sort. A lot of the leaders that we look up to, you know, have experience, meaning they have paved the way. They have put in their time for their career. They have awards. They, you know, when we think of our favorite, like our favorite actor, you know, a lot of times they have an Oscar, they have won an Emmy. Like that's experience, right? And then exposure is them being in all of these different movies and all these different platforms to display their skill set to the world.
As you build upon that foundation and you're building your personal brand, how does networking become absolutely essential when you're no longer an employee?
Networking is amazing. Like, I think that networking is something that some people, they undervalue a lot, because with the online process of getting a job or the online process of like creating a social media account, people just want to sell their products and services on social media without really networking and creating alliances. So it's so important, even in corporate America and in entrepreneurship, is to create alliances. So being on your podcast show right now, this is a win-win for both of us. So this is how I'm networking with you, and I will expand my brand in a way that people will be able to hear me on your show. But then I will retweet and reconnect and tell people about your awesome podcast show. So I think in the career-related networking is like LinkedIn is amazing. LinkedIn is a career savior for those that maximize it and use it correctly. Because I've reached out to so many strangers that I don't know that have been able to have conference calls with me about career-related topics that I was having challenges with.
How do you take that drive and passion to connect with people online and move it in person? Do you have the equal ability to do that, or do you stay only in the online world?
I actually do both. So I actually in my career coaching book, I talk about networking for introverts versus extroverts, because I think it's really hard for some people to do the face-to-face thing. I don't have social anxiety, so it doesn't really bother me to do the face-to-face. For me, I love meetups. I love to go on meetup.com and go to monthly meetups. I really enjoy conferences in person and networking with people at career-related conferences. I really enjoy meeting up with people that I met online in person at the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Because once you make that human connection online and there's some really good energy between you and that person, when I send a direct message through LinkedIn, I always edify their profile, edify who they are, and always explain to them, you know, why I'm reaching out. And then sometimes we set up time to meet face to face for dinner or for coffee. That's the whole, you know, going from online to in person.
Did this come naturally to you, or did you, you know, have to fumble your way through some difficulties?
Naturally, I'm an outgoing person. I hope people can feel the vibes through this podcast interview.
Absolutely.
I had to get over the idea of that everyone wasn't going to respond to me online through online network. I think online networking is harder. Yeah. Because you're trying to introduce yourself to a stranger that can't physically see you, but they can only see your profile, your Instagram, your Twitter, or whatever, however way you're reaching out. So I had to get over the fear of people saying no, and also people not responding back to my direct messages. So for all your listeners, I would say is don't allow that to discourage you, but create a very compelling direct message template that you can kind of edit and modify as you're reaching out to certain people, whether it's recruiters or whether it's other professionals. I think it's important to always make sure that you have that, but also know that some people are not going to respond.
And is it being confident and clear in what you're asking of the person that you're connecting with or attempting to connect with?
Yes, I would 100% agree with that statement, because people online, I would say even face-to-face networking is, in my past, I think I struggled with not being an active listener in person. Mm-hmm. And I was just worried about me networking with someone for what I could get out of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn that networking face-to-face is being an active listener and being able to understand who the other person that you're networking is, who they are, and how you both could benefit from that new relationship that you're trying to build. Mm-hmm. Online, people have very, very small attention span online because people are like looking at, they're scrolling, they're going from Instagram to LinkedIn to Facebook to all these different sites. So you have to probably be very clear and concise and not too wordy and be very upfront about what the ask is. What are you really, why are you, because some people are creeps, you know what I mean? You know, so you don't want to sound like you're coming off too creepy. So for, if you're applying for a job and you reach out mm-hmm. to the recruiter, be very clear about, I found this role on the website. I'm connecting with you because, hey, I applied to this job. Here's the URL to the job that I applied to. Attach your resume, put your contact in. Because a recruiter, they're very busy too. So I think your ask for each individual person you're trying to network with, you have to be very, very clear what you want out of their response from, you know, from your message.
Yeah, because as you're connecting with people, that is the actual extension of your brand and what actually forges the brand in the minds of others.
Yeah, I get some messages that people send me on LinkedIn. I'm not always inclined to respond because the message is not clear. And sometimes I get a whole career life story in my messages sometimes, but then I never know what they're asking me to help them with. Like they're giving me like 10, 15 years of like career hardship, but I'm not sure. Are they asking, you know, like what are you, at the end, you got to hook it in. You got to bring that message in.
Did you just need someone to talk to or?
Right? I'm not a career therapist. You know what I mean? But I think a lot of people don't always really be clear about what they're asking of the person that they're sending a message to.
Yeah.
And another thing just to add on to that is when someone goes to your profile, people may not take you seriously because your profile of your brand is poorly represented online. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you describe very clearly that I actually think is awesome is this concept of dating jobs. And why I love that is because if I would have dated my jobs a little bit better, I might have made less mistakes. Mm. And so just what is this idea of dating jobs?
This is one of my favorite concepts in the book. Build your brand by dating jobs is the mindset that we spend a big percentage of our time at work. You know, outside of our families, Monday through Friday, if you're a regular professional like I am, you spend a lot of time at work. But the way you build your brand by dating jobs is you're able to acquire new skill sets, meet new people. You're able to get that new experience and exposure that you wouldn't get by just staying on one job. So I don't want people to think that this is about job hopping because people think that speed dating or dating jobs is like you're going from this job to that job and you're not really committed to, you know, to whatever the role is that you've been you've been hired to do. But think about it. For those that are married, they had to go through several different bad dating relationships to understand and identify what they wanted out of a good spouse.
Right.
In order to understand what you want out of a good career, you're going to have different career experiences. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you're going to have to continue to say, hey, I'm going to stay here 24 months. Maybe I'm going to stay here for 3 years, 5 years. But the end goal is to gather this new information or this new experience from this new role. And once I feel like I'm no longer getting fed the things that I need out of that role, it's time to dump that job and go date a new job.
Mm. It makes me think, too, I've heard before where some people will actually start a job as a contractor working on a project basis to kind of get that insight into the organization and whether it would be a good fit or not.
That's an excellent point. So we are in this digital age right now where everybody's either contracting, or freelancing, right?
Yeah.
You know, so temporary, people look at temporary contracting roles as a bad thing, but it gives you like the appetizer. Do I really want the full meal? Do I really want the dessert? Because if the appetizer is nasty, then I'm not going to really be committed to having the other two, three courses of this meal. So I think that people that have an entrepreneurial mindset, that freelancing and hourly contracting or short-term contracting, which I've done both. Mm-hmm. I've done the W-2 lifestyle. I've done the short-term contracting. For me, after maybe 12 to 18 months, if the job doesn't interest me, I'm personally ready to move on. That's just me because it takes a lot to keep my creative energy into a relationship with a job that's not feeding me the projects, the culture, the leadership. So when we think about dating jobs, we're not just saying it's a whole lot more that comes with what you desire from a good job. It's leadership, it's culture, it's pay, it's work-life balance. There's so many things that you want out of that role, and you have to make sure that you're getting the things that you need out of that relationship.
It's hard to sometimes break your thinking on that's okay to do. Because sometimes, you know, people are just like, I have a job, that's good enough. Or isn't it good enough just to have a job? Whereas I think sometimes that keeps people small and in bad situations.
Yeah, it does. And you have to know yourself, right? There are some people that are super successful. Like my husband, he's been at the same organization, not in the same role, but he's been in the same organization for 19 years. He's been in several different roles and several different offices. He's gotten promoted. He's learned new skill sets. So I think that success could be still awesome being with one company, but you've been exposed to different roles or different offices. So I don't want people to think that you can date jobs within the same organization. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're moving around a little bit and you're getting different experiences from being in different roles or different offices.
And I think it's really important to reiterate something that you just said, is that you need to know yourself. And I think understanding timing and time in general, like when you said 12 to 18 months, for me, it's 4 months. But I learned that the hard way.
So tell me why it's 4 months for you, because I may have said the 12 to 18 months so people wouldn't think that I want them to job hop, but I'm more on 4 to 6 months. I could figure a job out in 6 months. What's your experience?
For me, it's like if I'm doing the same thing for 4 months straight, like I'm already checked out on other things. Because like my brain just works so fast and I'm thinking about so many things that if I have to slow down to like make sure something goes longer than that, I just get so up. I get uptight. I get irritable. And so it's just like, I know that at 4 months, unless it's like this massive long-term project and it's budgeted accordingly, that's a whole nother story. But, you know, typically if a project or a job, I get itchy around that 3 month mark. And I know that, okay, if something doesn't shift, I'm going to shift.
I mean, you know yourself. And I think that's amazing that you can identify that, because then you're not wasting your time. Honestly, the things that I've seen in 4 to 6 months have never drastically changed, even when I stayed a year. The same things that were happening when I was there at the 4 month mark are the same things that are happening now. And I've been there for 12 months. So I think that organizations really, what you see is who they are within those first, I would say, 90 to 120 days.
Something I want to talk about briefly is I want to talk about money, because you talk about getting paid now. And I'm curious how brands think about money, power, and respect differently than employees do.
I love this topic so much because people think getting paid is all about the money. I like the idea of thinking of like, my personal brand is no different than an actor or an actress. They get the money, power, and respect. And this is how they do it. And this is how professionals can do it. Everyday 9-to-5 professionals can do it as well. They, one, negotiate their contract for a role. They probably don't always take the bottom, just like the very first number that's thrown out there for a contract for a new role. We as professionals have to negotiate our salaries. We have to know our worth based upon our resume and our education, our experience and exposure. A lot of actors and actresses, they get the power because now they basically have taken career control. Like the power is in my hands. If I've been on a lot of different movies and these movies have gotten Oscars and they've broken box office numbers, I have the power off of these performance metrics. You know what I mean? So I have this resume that shows like, hey, like my movie was number one. Hey, I won an Oscar. Hey, I won an Emmy. So these are things about making sure that people understand that those things hold power. Because you're able to continue to negotiate. As professionals, when we get new certifications, new experience, new training, we can put that on our resume as power for the next job so we can always get the money and we can always negotiate other levels of benefits. That's where the respect comes in. People can't respect anything if you haven't developed a level of power within your brand to show that you're respect worthy. If you haven't leveled up with your skill sets and you've been on the same job and you haven't gotten any formal training, you've been doing the same job, how can someone respect you up against another candidate that has gone above and beyond to continue to have career progression? So that's what money, power, respect is. That's the formula to being able to get paid now.
That's well stated. And I honestly hadn't thought about power in that way. I mean, that's powerful.
I think professionals need to know, we all need to know that the power is really in our hands, because if you can go to an interview, just like an actor or actresses go to a casting call and they're doing an audition and they knock it out the park. When we go to interviews, like I like to say in my book, interviews is like showtime, right? If you knock that interview out the park, you're selling the resume you versus the real you, right? Mm-hmm. So when you meet people in an interview, you're also giving them a little bit of who you are. You, at that time, when you walk away from that interview and you know that you killed it, you have to take all that experience, all that knowledge that you have on your resume and use that as leverage, as power to get the things that you want out of that job offer.
And leveraging power so that it fuels your ability to perform in the showtime.
And leverage that power to fuel you as you get the role and you start the job, to feel confident in your role, right? So power is like, when I get on that job, I have to continue to make them feel like, yes, you hired me. I am knowledgeable. I can do this job. I am a subject matter expert. And that power that you own, not being, I'm not saying be a jerk, you know what I mean, at work and be cocky and be arrogant, but how can one respect you if they don't see the career power that you display in your daily deliverables every day?
So how have you had to rewire your thinking about money, power, and respect?
So when I left my federal government job in 2014 and I went to go into private sector, I had to rewire myself because I live in the Washington, D.C. area and everyone has a government job. As you know, D.C. is a very political, you know, is a very government driven city. So when I left my government job, I had to say, how am I going to, I had to kind of rebrand myself a little bit for private sector, number one, because my resume was very just had been in the government, had been in that last role for 5.5 years. I had to rewire myself and I had to make my government resume a private sector resume so I could compete up against other, you know, high performing private sector professionals. Then I had to take a step back and I had to reskill myself up to get to a level where I had that power, right? Because I had been in the government, which the government is always behind private sector. It's not as innovative. So in order for me to build up and rewire myself to get the career power and to get the respect, I had to take certifications. I had to read more books. I had to kind of, I like to say, we, in order to get the power to continue to rewire the money, power, and respect concept, we have to be a student of our career. We can never stop learning. So for me, that's what I had to do, is I had to learn that I had to continue to understand how to make myself marketable every 12 months.
Yeah. Wow. Every 12 months.
Every 12 months, I get a new certification in the IT industry. Every 12 months or every 6 to 12 months, I update my resume. Every Nice. 6 to 12 months, I am updating my LinkedIn profile. Or whenever I get a new skill or take a new training, I'm updating it on maybe every 3 months. But for me, constantly making sure that my online job profiles are updated every so often is very important for my personal brand online.
Absolutely. And I love the framework that you just provided, because I think a lot of people think that once college is done, learning is done.
No, I don't know. Me being in tech is such a fast paced industry. I think that if you're in HR, if you're in the medical industry, if you are in finance, there's so many things that may be changing. You don't want to just get behind the cutting edge when it's 5 years old. When they introduce new things, whether your job pays for it or whether you desire to do self online learning, I do a lot of self online learning myself. So I take a lot of courses online. It's just so important to be one of the very few that already got it before like thousands of other hundreds of thousands of other professionals have already received that same information.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your go-to place online to learn new things?
Udemy.com is my favorite source. When I found out that they had sales for courses for $9.99, I was like, wow, this has got to be like somebody punking me, because I was like, wow, I could take all these classes for $9.99 or $12.99. And they have a lot of free classes. So I recommend that. YouTube, free online learning through YouTube. So anything that you want to learn online, YouTube is an awesome source. I'm big on ebooks. Mm-hmm. I'm big on reading content that's shared on LinkedIn newsfeed. I find that a lot of smart people share valuable information on LinkedIn. And I subscribe to some of my favorite, tech blogs and stuff like that. But I'll tell anybody, if you just figure out what your learning preference is, because some people can't do online learning.
Which is a shame, because I look at my college journey, and when I first went to college, online really wasn't there yet. And I'm like, I wonder how I would have done if we had the online of today when I was going to college then.
And talking about college is a whole nother thing. A lot of people are starting to believe that college isn't that important anymore in certain industries, because Facebook and Google and all these companies have lowered their education standards. I'm a big fan of telling people to go to college, but I'm a big fan of people constantly learning. Yeah. I feel like the people that can outlearn somebody with a college degree, to me, is better fit on my team than someone that just got a college degree and they stop bettering themselves after they got that degree.
So as you look ahead for 2020 and the decade ahead, you shared a little bit about where you're headed, but what is your big vision for the road ahead?
My big vision for the road ahead is to help so many people that feel stuck become unstuck through career rehab. My vision with my professional life, as I already stated earlier, continuing learning cybersecurity and continuing learning, cloud computing technologies and artificial intelligence technologies. 9 to 5 is my bread and butter. So, I have to continue to advance my skills in that area. But far as my personal brand, is I want this book and I want Career Rehab, the concept, to alter and shift people's mindsets about how they see themselves, because so many people think that it's impossible to do a career change, or they think it's impossible to go from this job to a new job. I want to make what people think is impossible possible with some of the things that we've kind of talked about already on this call.
So what advice would you give to people who are stuck or unsure of maybe how to think about their careers or what's ahead for them in the new year and the new decade?
My advice would be to get a journal or get a sketch pad. Like, I go to Ross or Marshall's and I get like these journals and sketch pads that have no lines on them. Because I think it's so important to not just to journal down in words how you see yourself, but to sketch it out, to draw it out. So however way you want to get your career goals written down, I think it's important for you to write those career goals down now and even into the earlier months of the new year. Next thing I think is important to do is to align those career goals with new skills that you need. So if your career goals is saying, hey, I want to do a career change, or hey, I want to go into this new role, but I don't have these skills, I think it's important to go ahead and get a jump start on self-online learning, asking your job for training. The next thing would to be is to update your resume and LinkedIn profile. It's important to think about all the things you did in 2019, right? Because you probably may not have captured everything. Update that. You know, I know a lot of people are going to spend their holidays with their families and doing things, but take advantage of this time to reflect on what happened and where you're trying to go. And then the next thing is to align your career goals and those skill sets with new roles that you can start applying to once you feel like your skills are at a certain level that you can qualify for an interview.
That's awesome. Well, Kanika, this has been such a fun conversation. Thank you so much for reaching out and sharing your personal brand, because I can't think of a better way to end a year and start a new decade.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show. And I really appreciate all these awesome questions, and the conversation was super amazing. And I hope that everyone will be able to rehab their careers and they can launch themselves off into the new year and they can have a lot of success.
Awesome. Well, one last question for you. What was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
It was one of your shows. You probably need a hobby. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I love that it was a short show. It had a lot of gems. As professionals, it's so healthy that we have hobbies. We get so involved in our work that we don't, it keeps you sane. It keeps you happy. It was so many major gems in there that you dropped about having a hobby and why it's important to make time for that hobby. My hobby is photography.
Oh, cool.
But I really enjoyed it because I think professionals, a lot of us that are creative professionals, we get upset at being at a job where we can't be as creative. and it kind of sometimes it can be stressful.
Well, Kanika, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. What a fantastic message that you had to bring. And I just wish you nothing but success in the new year.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on the show.
Whether you're a creative entrepreneur or an employee looking to make a greater impact, I hope you took a ton of notes from this conversation with Kanika. I, for one, look forward to continuing the ownership and responsibility of my work and advancing the vision and purpose of that work. Be empowered as you step into the new year and decade while creating epic lives. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.